As little girls and boys, we look up at the glowing angel that gave us life with love and adoration. But for too many, this is not a happy reality. For many, the woman holding us is a true monster. These are their nightmares. Delve deep as we unravel the turbulent bonds between mother and child. You are listening to Monsters and Mothers with your host, Betty Wild.
How did you view yourself before coming to prison? What sort of person do you believe you were?
Good person. Pretty much would give me the shirt off my back. Never met a stranger.
Tell me about your relationship with Zara.
We hit it off right from the bat.
What did you like about Zara?
She had spunk about her. She never gave up. Always had a smile on her face. Always.
Did you have a close bond?
Very close. She called me Mom, and I treated her like she was my own child. She got no different treatment than my other kids did. Actually, my other kids got jealous of her. They said I treated her better.
Why would a school teacher give her her own personal cell number and say to her, if you ever need me, call me?
That right there was out of protocol. I even said something to the principal about that. Me and Adam went because that was against the rules. They should not have ever done that.
Why did you sign a piece of paper here that admitted that you have a history and a pattern of physical, verbal and psychological abuse of Zara?
I never signed that paper.
You did? There's your signature.
Okay, somebody's had me sign something I shouldn't sign because that's not so.
That's not your signature. That's along with your attorney. That's not your signature.
That's my plea bargain, right?
Yes, but you signed that you accept that you had a history and a pattern of physical, verbal and psychological abuse of Zara.
That was in with my plea bargain. Yes,
so you signed? You signed?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Tell me about the day that Zara died.
She was laying on her bed and I said, Zara, are you okay? And I walked over to the bed and I said, Zara. She still didn't move. I put my hand on her and I could tell she wasn't breathing. And my first thought was CPR. So I immediately started CPR. I worked on her for probably about 30 minutes and couldn't get her back, begging the whole time for God not to take her. Right then, I should have called 911, but I got scared.
Of what?
I didn't know what to do. I've never been faced with anything like that.
If you'd done CPR, you'd dial 911, wouldn't you?
Most people would have, yes.
Of course, the evidence doesn't show that what you're saying is the truth.
It does to a point, but there's a little bit.
Not even to a point. The phone records show that on the day the body was disposed of, the day that you told police it was disposed of, there were something like 9 calls, and many of those calls were to Adam. Why would you call him if he's right beside you?
He was calling my phone. I wasn't calling his because he kept losing my phone.
No, you were calling him.
I wasn't calling him.
He wasn't with you, was he?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't think so. That's the truth, isn't it?
No, ma'am.
Did you murder Zara?
No, ma'am.
Why do you deny this when the evidence is overwhelmingly that you did?
Because I'll continue to stand by my story.
You'll continue to lie?
No, I'll stand by my story. Nobody was listening to what I was saying. They were going by circumstantial evidence. They weren't going by anything I was saying.
You are as guilty as sin. You are as guilty as sin. You are a guilty woman. And you will not take responsibility for your actions.
What's up, everybody? This is Betty Wild coming to you from Monsters and Mothers. Thank you for tuning in. In today's episode, we will be talking about Zara Baker, who was dismembered by her mother, Elisa Baker, who was actually her evil stepmother. Now, Zara Baker was born November 16th, 1999, to Adam Baker and Emily Dietrich. So Emily Dietrich is her natural mother. And shortly after that she was born, her mother, Emily, decided that she was going to give her up because her postpartum depression was just too much for her. So she gave her up to her father, Adam, and she said that when her condition improved, she wanted another chance to see her, which was denied by her dad. He didn't feel the same way that Emily did, and he didn't want her to even be allowed to be part of Zara's life. So then he moves his family to another city. Emily was trying to find Zara for years, but it was impossible.
And she never got to see Zara again.
Adam and his parents were regularly changing their address and phone number, so it was hard to localize them. In 2005, Zara was diagnosed with cancer, and she lost one of her legs and had to have a prosthetic. Later, she was diagnosed with lung cancer, and it wasn't everything. She was also deaf, and as a result of her cancer treatments, she had to wear hearing aids. This little girl has gone through so much. So far, she's survived cancer twice, became deaf, and has a prosthetic leg. So this is like a little hero, a little champion, and she's always happy. So it was reported that she was, even through everything, she was never down or depressed about what was going on in her life. Now, at this time, Adam, while Zara is receiving treatments, he's on websites trying to meet someone. And then this is where he actually meets Elisa Baker. And they start having this online relationship, which actually goes on for about 2 years. And he is just smitten with her. Now, remember, he lives in Australia and she's from the U.S. So it took him a little bit of time to save up the money, but he eventually bought her a ticket and flew her out there. And he was so excited for her to meet everyone, as well his family and friends. They couldn't wait to meet her either. But from the onset, as soon as they met Elisa, everybody was put off by her. I mean, they didn't like anything about her, her demeanor, the way she carried herself. You could just see that there was just something off about her. And what they soon discovered was that anything that came out of the woman's mouth was a fat lie. And she wasn't even good at it. So she would pick these lies that were so magnanimous. Like, she actually told people that she was an ex-police officer that got shot in the line of duty. And she also said in another story that she's a bounty hunter and that she knew the dog from that show, The Bounty Hunter, you know, the one with the short blonde hair. So her lies weren't these little tiny lies. When she lied big, and it just made everyone uncomfortable. And you really couldn't disprove anything because once she's from the U.S., again, there she is with Adam, and already nobody's approving of her. But you could not tell that to Adam. He was in love. He was smitten. And he left and headed towards the U.S. with Elise. And he took Zara with him. And that was really painful for Zara. She lost all her connections, mostly with her grandmother, who she was so close with. And then on top of that, she lost touch with her friends and all her medical attention that she was getting, which she really needed. So this was a huge change for Zara. Adam and Elise, they didn't have anywhere to go when they got to the U.S., and so they were hoping to live off the kindness of others. And so at first, they stayed with Elise's father, at least while they were trying to figure it out. But while they were there, and while they were trying to figure it out, now, Zara was missing her grandmother repeatedly. I mean, she was missing her incredibly. But the abuse began very quickly for Zara. Geraldine, who lived near and close to the father, knew Elisa growing up, and she knew what she was capable of. She knew how toxic she was. She knew about the lies. But most of all, she knew about her violent nature. And she was very concerned for the little girl. And at times, Geraldine would take Zara when the couple wanted to be alone, and they would go on these dances together. And I mean, like, Zara and Geraldine would go on dances. Even though she had a prosthetic leg, she would recall that Zara loved to play and dance, and they had a wonderful time when they went out. Now, finances started to get really rough for the couple, but they kept this all hidden from the father. And the father eventually caught on, and he filed a complaint against Elise. Right now, she is reporting that she is paying all of these bills, and he finds out that that was a lie all along, and no bills got paid. And that really put him in debt, and he was not a wealthy man. In fact, they were pretty poor, all of them. Now, the troubles were only about to begin. Then, after being kicked out of her father's house, they rented a trailer in this trailer park,
And the people there were really now able to start to see how Elisa was treating Z. I'm going to call her Z from now on because that's her little nickname for me. So Zara, Z, would have her walking up and down the street up this hill. And people were starting to see this little girl who was limping and crying. And they would report seeing Elisa hitting her on the head, calling her names and telling her to walk straight. And she would make her walk up and down repeatedly, trying to get her to walk better. I'm assuming because she didn't like the sympathy that it drawed, which makes no sense if you listen on in to the rest of the story. She would yell at her, "You think you're so special. You need to get that limp out of your leg." This is what other people are hearing her saying to this little girl. The school would also report similar things happening. And on one instance, they even made a point to make a home visit because Zara had come to school with a black eye. And they weren't buying her explanation of what had happened. So they made an attempt. They spoke with the mother. The mother denied having done anything to Zara. But the teacher still didn't feel comfortable about it. And even went so far as to giving Zara her phone number, that in case that she felt unsafe, that she could call. Now, they should have followed up more about this. But unfortunately, the couple yet again moved. Now, this time, they picked up everything and moved to North Carolina in Granite Falls. So again, any time that Elisa feels like someone's on to her, knowing about how big of a liar she is, how abusive she is, she just gets up and goes. And Adam, you know, because he's not a U.S. citizen, he doesn't really have much say in what they do. So she's really controlling this relationship. So now they move to Granite Falls. And there's a new school there, and Z had her picture taken there. And once she had her picture taken there, I think it was her natural mother, Emily, had known that she had moved to the U.S. and was in that area. So I guess she was checking schools, and she finally found Emily in one of the class photos. She was really making an active effort to find where her daughter had gone in the U.S. And I guess there was some type of contact made because Elisa found out about it and, again, picked them up. And they moved. And so this was a constant thing. And in that place, they actually also did get kicked out, I actually remember, because of their constant fighting. And so they were so loud that that's ultimately what got them kicked out of that one. In 2010, moved to a small house in Hickory,
which was about 6 weeks before Zara was reported missing.
So this is where the cracks happen in our system. So when a child is reported repeatedly, it does follow them, but it takes time to catch up all the paperwork that's sent over to the new school. Now, in the last school, they couldn't find her because she was being homeschooled, but Elisa never reported that she was being homeschooled. And Adam, being a terrible dad, didn't realize really what was happening. So he just went along with everything that she was doing. There was no way for them to figure out. They were supposed to report that they had set up a homeschool, but they never did, and no one followed up. However, people did still continue to report the abuse that they saw. Now, some would say that in the 911 call that the father doesn't sound very emotional. He says, "Hey, my daughter's missing." It was very cavalier. You know, you're like, "No big deal. You mind if you have a second, come by, check out why my kid's missing?" That was a sort of the tone that everyone was really picking up from his talk, is sort of the way he was speaking. But I know a lot of men, and they don't get very emotional. I think a lot of it had to do with he was really nervous because of what he was being fed by Elise. I think she's the one who actually told him to make the call. You know, he did work long hours, and not all men are incredibly concerned about their kids. You know, unfortunately, they don't have that mommy instinct that they check in on them every night. So what he actually winds up saying, and that shocks everyone, is that he has not actually seen his daughter in 2 weeks when the investigation begins, which is just unheard of. How do you not check in on your kid? Even if you come in the middle of the night from work and you're tired and you pass out, maybe one or two nights slip by you, but 2 weeks, you don't even say hello to her? So that's something that doesn't sit very well with me. Now, when investigators report the state of the house, they say that the house was extremely dirty, especially her room. And they don't even like to recall what her room looked like because it looked like someone carelessly threw up like hot pink paint on the walls and was very sloppily done. But it actually was the only brightest room in the entire house because at that time, Elisa had taken on to a darker side where she was more into dark purples and blacks, which was the color of the bedroom. Earlier in her life, she was more into pastels, but now she's on this dark kick and she's more into gothic stuff. And so the house appears very dark. And in their bedroom, the only thing really was there was a waterbed, not much room to even get around this bed. And that was a little odd to have just a waterbed in your room. Investigators, when called, they notice that Adam is completely relaxed and Elisa, she is just walking back and forth, pacing, and she's nervous and upset, talking about how Z was just her angel and she would never let her out of her sight. But when any time that Adam tried to talk, she just kept interrupting him. I think one of the investigators goes into the other room, sees a piece of paper on Elisa's nightstand. It's the Duke energy bill, and there's no envelope, which they found odd because at this time at the police call, they are saying that someone lit a fire and they think that someone did some foul play because the original call was about a fire that had occurred. And that was the original 911 call at 5:30 in the morning. So to backtrack, the investigator looking at that note was connecting it because a ransom note was found in their Chevy Tahoe and it was written on a Duke Energy bill. So they come over and investigate the fire. But at the time also, they don't think to ask about the little girl because they don't even know she exists. So they didn't really do a thorough investigation because at the time they are just looking at the fire and they hadn't actually noticed the ransom note yet at that time. So they leave and then around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Adam then makes a second call saying, "Hey, my daughter's been kidnapped." So the original phone call was, "Hey, there's a fire." The second one the same day is, "Hey, my kid's missing." So as ridiculous as that sounds, that's actually how it played out. So when the police arrived again, Adam was trying to piece it together for them by saying that someone had poured gasoline on the car during the night and then left the ransom note, saying he believed that his daughter was taken, but whoever threatened his boss was thinking that they were taking his boss's daughter instead of his. That was the only thing that he could really wrap around how or why this happened. But why would you put a ransom note in a car you're going to set fire to? The ransom note read, "Mr. Coffee, you like being in control. And who's in control now, Mr. Coffee? We have your daughter. And your pot-smoking redhead son is next, unless you do what I say. I want $1 million in unmarked bills, no cops." And in this ransom letter, there's no cops written twice. The police started to search the house for handwriting samples. During the search, they also went through all the crawl spaces to see where a 10-year-old could hide. So as they were searching the yard, they had also notified victim's service coordinator and told her about the ransom note. So when she arrived, she saw Elisa rocking back and forth on the couch. Then Elisa's oldest daughter, Amber, showed up to the house. She was kept outside to be questioned by the police. She had gotten a call from her mother about the fire earlier in the morning, and then got another call that Zahara was missing. Elisa told the police that the kidnappers had taken the wrong child and that it was Mr. Coffee's daughter that was supposed to be taken, and that Mr. Coffee needed to go on TV and pay this ransom and get Zara back. She appeared to be worried and concerned and told them how close the two were and how they had both survived cancer, hoping to gain some sympathy by describing a list of health issues that she herself was going through. So again, here we have the narcissistic type, and what is she doing? She's turning all the attention to her. This is also called the halo effect. So this is done with the FBI. They will They want to know when they ask you truth questions if you're being truthful or not. And according to your body language and what you do, will let them know whether or not you're being honest. So one of the things that people who are dishonest do is they create the halo effect. And what that does is, look at me, I'm innocent, I'm perfect. And she's doing that by saying, look at me, look at what I've gone through. Look at what Z and I have gone through. We both survived cancer. I'm lucky to be alive, she says. And then she goes on about how close they were. And so she's creating this illusion. You can't look here because I'm a perfect mom who's gone through so much. So you have to look elsewhere. But to the trained specialist, they know better. And they were already starting to suspect her by her weird and her, the way she was behaving. So Elisa was already distributing signs of Munchausen by falsifying all these illnesses that she had gone through. And then when she even went on to say that Z knew how sick she was and that it was Z that was looking after her, which really only made her look bad. So now a little girl with a prosthetic who just survived cancer and is still in very ill health is taking care of this adult. So that wasn't making her look any better. And now, Elisa's appearance was completely odd because it was really unavoidable to notice that her face was smudged with black hair dye. So it looked like she had gone quickly and wasn't really sure if it was the day before or that morning that she had quickly dyed her hair because the black was still dripping from her scalp and left like these stains on her head. So the officers were noticing how messy she looked. And really, only a crazy person does something like that. Just saying. They also noticed that every time she cried, there was like hardly any emotions. It was like these crocodile tears just kept coming out. But when they looked at Adam, he was emotionless too. But on times, it would catch him sniffling. Like, he was really trying not to get emotional. But when he did cry, and those little whimpers, they actually felt like he was just hurt and confused by what was happening. And then they call Mr. Coffee, who arrives within an hour. Now, this is Adam's boss. Mr. Coffee shows up, and he had just been at the country club. So he's coming over, and he agrees to answer all the police officers' questions, and the police take him into the car. And this is where he would actually begin the unraveling of the lies that the police are being told at the moment. Now, earlier during the investigation that day, they had asked where they were the day before. And Elisa had said that they had gone to the Oktoberfest, and that was on October 8th. So they said that they went out and they brought Z with them. Now, in the car, now the boss, Mr. Coffee, is being interviewed, and he's saying that that Zara was not with them, that he saw them backing out of their driveway on their way to go, and Z was not in the car. And so they had made mention to them that there's a way to verify on the surveillance tapes of whether or not they were there with Z. So with a little prodding, the truth did eventually come out. Now, because of the different stories that are happening, this prompted the police to take the Bakers to the station for questioning. And I keep thinking that it's disturbing that after Elise murdered the little girl, that she could even go to a party in the first place. So this whole story is just already mounting up to be very bizarre and disturbing. So while Elise is in the patrol car, and mind you, they separated them, so now they're heading to the station in two different vehicles. Elise is looking back at the house, and she asks a wild question. Why are they putting police tape around the house? Do they think a murder took place there? And the officer driving kept that little tidbit to herself and just explained casually that it's something that they have to do, it's protocol, that they have to surround it to preserve any evidence. But at that time, she registered that, saying that that's a very bizarre thing to say for a stepmom or mom to say, what's going on? Do they think someone was murdered in the house when it was a kidnapping that she's called in for? Okay, so they drive down to the police station. All the flags are raised. The ransom note looks suspicious. Their lies are suspicious. And I think this is when Adam started to really wonder what happened to his daughter, because he could overhear the lies that are coming from Elisa. And he's not certain what's really going on, and he's scared. Remember, he is not a U.S. citizen. His daughter's missing, and all of these things are kind of being brought to his attention as well as the police almost at the same time, as if he was the pawn in this. At this time, they issued an Amber Alert for Z. Now, what was incredibly strange was that both Adam and Elise both had warrants out for their arrest when they were called about the fire. And their warrants were for writing bad checks and obtaining property by false pretenses. So that mostly they were petty crimes. But it did paint a picture for the police. Elisa had a nephew. And this nephew had pressed charges against the couple for threatening them with weapons. Apparently they were in business together selling knockoff handbags at the time. And I guess they had a falling out. And he reported that they had a pistol and a stun gun as weapons that they were using, and that they would threaten even their 8-year-old child. So Adam denies threatening to shoot them. And they do drop the charges for that, but it does show that he was found guilty for trying to run the couple off the road with his car. So he isn't as innocent as he appears to be. His sentence was, at the time, an appeal. His 911 call was indeed a little questionable, since he remained calm about reporting his daughter missing. Now, when questioned, their stories, of course, aren't matching up. Elise had said that morning she woke up to tell him about the fire, but Adam says that he heard a car door slam, and that's what woke him. So when the fire department arrived, they noticed Elisa's strange demeanor, but when they saw the fire, it didn't seem like anything was dangerous. In fact, it looked like it was just a small brush fire that someone started on their own, probably to gain some attention. So he had to notify the police when a fire is of an unknown origin, and it just appeared to be a few twigs that were caught on fire at the time. Now, the ransom note said that we have your daughter. But when Mr. Coffey showed up, he was actually with his teenage daughter. And the police asked him, is this your only daughter? And then he said yes. So we already know now that this is some type of a hoax, because clearly there was no kidnapping taking place. Now, at this point, no one has asked about Z or looked for her. The neighbors didn't even know that they had a daughter. And the officers didn't even think to ask, but they didn't even know she even existed. Which makes zero sense. If they had gone into the house and they had done all the proper looking into the rooms the first time, they would have said something. But because it was some brush fire, it got literally brushed away. And nothing was really thought of to be out of order. But how can you believe that Adam had no idea? I mean, if there's a fire, if there's police in your house, if it's been a while, why wouldn't you go in and check on your daughter? Now, originally, he was just saying, well, he thought she was sleeping, and she's been moody lately, and she really only comes out of the room when she's hungry. And she has a hearing aid, so he didn't think that she was really listening or hearing anything of what was going on. But it sounds like Elise also was planning this in his head, that she's in her room, leave her alone, and coming up with things to keep him out of the room. Now, Elisa had to come up with a story quick. After all, the girl has been missing for 2 weeks. Now, earlier, the day before the party, an inspector had showed up at the house asking for Mr. Coffey, and Elisa had shooed him away and asked him to leave. So that was sort of like interesting, because I think that's where she started to get an idea brewing in her head of what she was going to say. But it also, she thought at first that it was the school checking up on Z, and she misinterpreted his visit, or thought that they were just trying to check up on her through him as a ruse, that he wasn't really an inspector, that this was a way to find out what was happening. So she had actually set the fire to make it look like she was kidnapped. When Adam came home later on the 9th, Elise had run out and was starting to scream that Zara was gone, And that's what prompted him to call the police around 2. And then Adam drove around to look for Z, went to his boss thinking maybe the girls got mixed up. And the boss is like, what are you doing? Call the police. Don't come here. And so he goes back home and calls the police. Now, how he must have even gotten this idea was probably also fed by Elise. He's obviously not a bright person, as you can see. During the investigation, they begin this huge search for Z and singling everyone out that they heard who could have possibly heard from Elise. So now they have in a separate place Elisa, the daughter, the boss, Mr. Coffee, and Adam. Elisa is telling this wild story that she is now pregnant, currently pregnant with twins. All right, now I have to laugh at this point because if Adam is anywhere within hearing distance that she could be pregnant with twins, he's probably like, what the fuck is she talking about? He can't even keep up with her. So that's what's running through my head. But to bring a shocking clarity, Elisa's daughter tells the police at the same time that they're hearing that she's pregnant that her mother had a hysterectomy. So how could you have a hysterectomy and have twins? So now some more new bombshells are being dropped. The police oddly ask Elisa how many times she's married. And she's like, I don't think I want to answer this question. But Elisa had originally told Adam she was only married twice, when actuality she was married 5 times. And the guy who Adam thought was her brother was actually one of her husbands, Aaron. Now, they were married for a year, Adam and Elise, before Aaron and her fully got a divorce. So now, Adam, he is starting to cooperate with the police and realizing that the woman that he's trusted is realizing what she's potentially capable of and starts cooperating and stops protecting her. Elise said she would take a polygraph test. And I'm assuming that she thought she was such an exceptional liar and could pass one with flying colors that she could pass any test. Now, when she's in the room to be tested, they ask her only 3 questions. 1, do you know who wrote the ransom note? She says no. 2, do you know if anyone has done harm to that child? And she says no. 3, did you hurt Zara? And the machine found that in each of her answers, she was being deceptive. Her handwriting was also a match to the ransom note. And they told her they didn't want to like run around anymore with questions. And they told her that they believed she was the one who wrote the note. And from that second on, she shut down and stopped cooperating with them. Adam also agreed to the polygraph as well, answering the same questions, as it showed that he did believe, though, from his questionings, because they asked him, do you believe you know who did this to Zara? He said no. And that was found to be a false. So we now know that he suspects, if anything, that someone is responsible for this and that he knows who they are. Now, after hours of trying to stick to his story, he finally broke and said that Elisa told him to lie or he would be in trouble for being in the U.S. and Z would be taken away. So he lied about Z being with them at the Oktoberfest, but he originally thought that Z was in her room, not feeling good, because that's what Elisa told him. So despite the daughter's illness, he thought it was okay, and she thought it was okay to go dancing and drinking. Again, I can't really put judgment on people because people really do stupid things, but that is what he's saying. More questions on the polygraph came, and they were able to narrow down where Z might be. Adam said that he had mentioned to Elise that his boss wanted him to burn some brush on this piece of property, and that's where he thinks that Elisa might have put the body. Now, Elisa's daughter, Amber, didn't think either of them had anything to do with Z's being missing, but said that she should ask her sister, Brittany. And at that point, they didn't even realize that there wasn't even another child involved. So they contacted Brittany, and Brittany confirmed that she believed her mother was responsible, and that she and her mother constantly fought, and that she left to escape her torment. So that's a biggie. Brittany says that she personally witnessed Z being abused, and that she tried to take her herself away from the house to protect her. And Elise called her and said that if she doesn't bring her back, that she was going to report her for kidnapping. So she returned the little girl. I don't get that. If you want to get rid of her and someone else is willing to have her, why not let her have her? It was Brittany that reported the black eye to the Caldwell Social Services. She knew her mother had heard her. This gave new insight to what was really going on, and also the time when Elise asked for an attorney. They didn't want to make the arrest yet, hoping to trip them up a little further to have more evidence on them. But when the oldest girl called saying that her mother was going to flee the country, that's when they issued the arrest for the warrants they currently had. The FBI read her her rights, her Miranda rights, and acted as though they knew nothing about the case, that this was just about previous warrants. But they decided to question her again from the beginning, and Elisa just ran them in circles, leading them in different directions. But they were one step ahead of her and decided to just ask her directly. "We know you wrote the note. We just want to know why." There was a long pause, and she processed what they were saying. And then she says she hated that he thought he was a god and that he was so demanding. But she wrote it in the heat of the moment, she says, and meant to take the note off the car. She still states that she doesn't know what happened to Z. It was then discovered that Elisa, over the years, had lied about illnesses to other people, and that other people had helped her, and that they also found out that she was lying and left her. They said that she would tell them that her kids were sick as well, and even put Brittany in a wheelchair when she didn't need it. She did plead guilty to 9 counts of felonies on her warrants, agreeing to cooperate, and led them to where they could find her body, and where they found her torso and her prosthetic. But they needed to find the little girl's head to see if she was abused. Her daughter Brittany didn't think it was unlike her mother to be able to dismember Z's body. The kids helped the police, and she said that she was talking to someone in London, and they gave her $10,000. Now, she met this other guy in London, who she's also, you know, making this guy believe, just like she did with Adam, and luring them into her web. So she somehow gets this guy who she met on IMVU, which I think is funny because I believe it's an animated way to meet someone else. So he sends her $10,000 because, of course, she tells him she has cancer, and he Western Unions her money. Elisa, when finally comes down to it and starts to confessing what actually did happen, she says that it was natural how she died and that Z had a stomach bug that day. So she didn't feel good and she had gone to her room. And when she checked on her, she noticed that she wasn't breathing and began to do CPR on her. She said she called Adam instead of the police, and their conversation, she was told by Adam she told Adam she wanted to call 911, and that Adam told her not to, and that to relax, take her medications, and that he would take care of it. And then she said that she didn't feel comfortable about that, and they were just walking around the yard trying to figure out what to do, and then Adam says, "I'm going to Walmart." He then goes to the kitchen, gets some trash bags and utensils, turns on the water to make some sounds so that what's happening in the bathroom, in the bathtub, it doesn't sound so horrific. This is her story, and she's blaming it all on Adam. Now, she said Adam asked her to help her, and she demanded answers. She was scared. "I didn't know what to do," she says, and again, she's lying. So she said that she had to go along with his plan, and that's why they scattered the body parts. She said she struggled daily with what they had done, not knowing whether or not to call 911. They were confident, though, that Adam had nothing to do with the murder or placement of the body. They were able to follow the evidence and match Elisa's cell phone pings to the location of where the body was buried, and at the same time that Adam's phone was pinging 20 miles away at his work, where co-workers also say he was. So the physical evidence was culpable and disproving Elisa's statement. Now, in the case is when they bring in my favorite person, the forensic blood pattern analysis tech. So now we have someone coming in and they're looking everywhere for blood splatter. So they go into the room, they go into Z's room, and they find 18 specks of splatter on the wall that suggests that Zara had been hit in the head repeatedly, which is why I believe that they were looking for the head to be able to say that she was murdered here in that manner. Now, despite numerous visits to protect this child, the constant moving, which was about 4 times in 1 year, had prevented her from getting the help that she wanted. But it was clear that anytime someone did see something, which I'm happy to hear, people reporting it. Unfortunately, she did fall through the cracks because with the moving, they were not able to keep track of her. Now, Brittany says that she saw her mother strike Z on the head and that she was crying. And that is why she tried to take Zara away. And that morning, Zara went to school with 2 black eyes and had urinated on herself. She was afraid to go home, though, and she had soiled her pants and she was afraid to go home with another change of clothes. So a teacher had helped her by cleaning her up and drying her off. Oh, gosh, this case is just so insane. So it looks like that Elisa wound up getting 18 years in prison. And they threw on an additional 10 years when a little bit down the road, they also discovered that she was drug dealing. So they threw an extra 10 years on for drug dealing. The skull was found in April 2018 by a hunter, and he had sent it to the FBI, and they sent it out to get analyzed, and they did prove that the skull did belong to Zara, but they could not prove how she died still. Adam was deported and was not brought up on any charges. He was allowed to take Zara's remains, though. This is a really unfortunate story because deep down, I really believe that this man had tried to do the best that he could for his daughter, and being in the situation and working overtime and also dealing with a con artist like Elisa, I could see how this happened right under his nose. He was a lonely man. And you will see in other interviews how heartbroken he is, and that the love and relationship that he did have with Zara in Australia was a lot more peaceful and loving, and she lost everything by this one decision that he had made and is still paying for it. Thank you for listening. I'm Betty Wild, and you're listening to Monsters and Mothers.
Thank you for listening to Monsters and Mothers. Subscribe to hear more chilling accounts of mothers who commit unspeakable horrors.